The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. With her childhood marked by abuse and dysfunction, Penny Maxwell knows how painful the healing process can be.
So with my kids, I would go in at night, you know, are they still breathing? Are they still breathing? And something that was supposed to bring joy wasn't as joyful as it should have been. This marriage that is supposed to be joyful, and here I am wondering, is he going to do to me what every other person has done to me? That was sown into my heart, and I had to pull that out by the roots.
Next on Life Today.
Hi, welcome to Life Today. I'm Sheila Walsh here with Randy Robeson. And today we're going to be talking to a beautiful woman. Her name is Penny Maxwell. And she's written a book called Setting Broken Bones. Penny, welcome to Life Today.
Thank you so much for having me. What a joy and honor to be here today.
You start with a pretty interesting story. You talk about a friend who broke their nose. And there's such a profound lesson in what you extract from that. Tell us about it.
Well, I was having dinner with, I'm sure what a lot of people would know, his name's Daryl Strawberry. He's a great friend of ours. And we were having this whole conversation, and I said, Dee, man, you and I have been through so much stuff in life. How come we're on the other side of our story when so many Christians are still struggling with the same things they've been struggling with for 10, 20, 30 years or more? And he said to me, because most people don't want to deal with their pain. Mm-hmm. And I said, ah, you're right.
Huge, yeah.
I have a friend who had a skiing accident and she broke her nose and she just kind of let it be and it healed improperly. Mm-hmm. And because it healed improperly, I mean, it was a little crooked to look at it. It wasn't anything that was horrific, but she struggled at night to breathe properly. She struggled at night to get the amount of sleep she needed because it was just hard for her to breathe. And I was like, go get it fixed. And she was like, absolutely not. That means like I'm signing up for pain. And I would rather not do that. I would rather stay the way I am than have to sign up intentionally for pain.
Wow.
A lot of people relate to that, but you especially. Can you tell people a little bit about some of your pain so they can understand the healing?
Yeah. So between my mom and my dad, there were 8 marriages.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I've been married to my husband for 30 years. Same man, all in a row.
Well done.
You know, so that was something big that I had to overcome. But also as a young girl, I wasn't protected. I wasn't looked after. And so I was sexually abused my entire childhood. And on top of that, growing up with a narcissistic mother, which when people ask me, what does that mean? And I would pretty much say it's kind of like mommy dearest, but without the coat hangers.
Wow.
It was bad. It was money covers everything. You don't acknowledge, you don't admit what's going on. You're controlled every single aspect. And so it was very difficult growing up. There were a lot of things. People say, you know, was the hardest thing that you went through the sexual abuse? Because that was 10 straight years by my grandfather.
Wow.
And I say, actually, it wasn't. It was growing up with a mother that you didn't know if it was Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
With my grandfather, it was predictable.
Right.
I knew it was going to happen. I knew when it was going to happen. With my mom, I would wake up and I didn't know, is this the day you're going to be praised and told you're a great child and a dress on your bed for the way that I treated you the day before? Mm. It developed some things in me that weren't healthy.
Yeah. You know, when I was reading your story, there's so much that's really horrific. I mean, you describe your childhood home as joyless. That has to be, where did you discover, like, what's your earliest recollection of a relationship with God?
When I was about 4 years old, this was before my mom had married her second husband, which took us out of, actually it was her third husband, which had taken us out of being poor and in the community where the bus would come around and pick and take us up to church if we wanted to go. Well, I actually would go to church on this little Baptist bus. They'd send it through our apartment complex. And at 4 years old, I was allowed to go get on the bus by myself.
Wow.
They'd go take me away to church. And I'd come back to the apartment complex, and there was something that was safe about God's house. Mm-hmm. There was something that was joyful about God's house. I remember learning different scriptures, and back then there were flannel graphs, but to me, you know, I was all about it. I just loved being in God's house, and it was so different than my own home. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated being able to go to church. And unfortunately, because of the narcissistic abuse, that would be held over me. And so anytime I would show joy in something, I would try to stuff it in because I knew it would be used to be taken away. And so I tried to make it like, yeah, it's okay. Going to church is okay. Because you didn't want to show too much excitement because then it was a tool used to manipulate.
Wow.
Being a teenager is difficult. Teenage girl, especially difficult. But having this dual worlds going on where you've seen some good and felt some joy in the church, but your home is a nightmare, really. Mm-hmm. What did that do to you? I mean, how did you even cope with that?
Well, as a teenager, there was a lot I didn't figure out. I knew there were things that were wrong in my house, but someone that's a really good narcissist, and I say my mom was a fabulous one, it's so confusing. There's the bait and switch, and you really, at times you think, well, I'm the problem. It's me. Things were always said to me, like, if you weren't in my life would be great. But then when I did leave home, things with her were still a mess. And so I think as a teenager, there was a lot that I didn't understand that I honestly wasn't capable of being smart enough to put together in the moment. I think it was when I was in my early 20s. I was married to my husband, and I had somebody that was a psychologist actually say, well, you know what's going on here, don't you? And I was like, no, could you please tell me? I've tried to figure this out for years and years, and I have not been able to figure out. And they told me, they're like, she's classic textbook. And that, a bell went off. And there wasn't an internet back then where I could look it up. Mm-hmm. But they did let me read their thesis paper, and they had done their thesis paper on my mother.
Oh. Wow. That's amazing. I want us to get to this whole umbrella over your whole book about the fact that so many in the church have not experienced healing because they don't want to go through the pain. I remember somebody saying to me at one point, when the pain of remaining the same is greater than the pain of change, then you're ready to change.
Absolutely.
Why do you think we resist it so much?
Well, think about the skiing accident that happened, right? Here she is, she's going down a slope, she's having fun, and life just happened.
Yeah.
Like so many of your viewers, life just happened. And in the course of life just happening, there are breaks that we experience. Mm-hmm. But those aren't breaks that we anticipate.
No.
The difference with us choosing to heal is this is pain that we're signing up for.
Right.
We're saying, I am signing up for pain. I am choosing pain. And I remember her words to me. It's, why would I sign up?
Mm-hmm.
To deal with something that I already felt before, I know what that now feels like, and I can anticipate that. It's one thing to get broken accidentally. It's a whole nother to say I'm choosing to be broken, knowing what that feels like, knowing there's a process that you're going to have to walk through. And so most Christians, and I would say most people in general, go, I am not touching that. I would rather limp through. I would rather breathe improperly. I will go through my dysfunctional marriage. I will, you know, have these dysfunctional relationships. I will have these issues that I'm just going to hold on to, this fear, this whatever, because I don't know what Pandora's box will look like.
Yeah.
And I can't control that. And this happened to me accidentally. I'm having to choose to be on the operating table, and I'd rather not.
Yeah.
And yet you did.
And it wasn't easy. It made me have to acknowledge things about myself, about my journey, about my past, about my present. And I think it was pretty much my husband that I was 20 years old when we got married. We've been married 30 wow. years now, so I'm 50. And I remember him calling me out on the carpet about some of my behaviors that to me, and I think that's what's so important for people watching today need to understand, we have made certain things normal because they were our normal, but they are not God's normal. They're not God's highest and best. So I remember one day very clearly, I was rummaging through my husband's briefcase. This is back when men always had a briefcase. Everything wasn't on your phone. I was rummaging through his briefcase and he wasn't at home. And I remember the Lord just saying, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I'm cleaning it up. It's a little messy. It's a little dirty. He just needs a little help keeping it tidy. And the Lord's like, that's not what you're doing. And this was me internally having a conversation with the Lord because he was really hitting my heart. I was like, yeah, I'm just like being a good wife and cleaning things up. And he's like, no, you're suspicious. Wow. You're suspicious because of what you've been through. And listen, I have given you a gift of discernment, but the gift of suspicion cannot be found in the fruit of the Spirit. There is not one. And you are suspicious because of what you've walked through, and you're looking for something. What are you looking through? And I'm like, oh, I don't know, a picture, a number, something, so I can have an aha moment. I caught you instead of ever being caught off guard because I was constantly being caught off guard.
That is so, so hard. What do you think the role of pride is in not wanting to deal with our stuff?
You know, pride is just an unwillingness to yield. And I think we have to be willing to yield and say, God, I give up the control that I'm trying to have over the situation. Because what we do is we develop patterns of hypervigilance. And it's one thing to be smart and be vigilant, but hypervigilance is excess. And so I remember my husband just saying to me one day, he's like, hey, you need to know I am a great husband, but I make for a lousy Jesus. And you are trying to put me in a place that I do not belong. And I was sabotaging relationship because I was demanding this perfection. You can never hurt me, or I'm going to put you in this box and move you. I didn't have the capacity to deal with pain. I had been ignoring it. And so God made me go back to where I was broken and healed wrong. And he said, this is going to hurt you. But I learned something the Bible refers to as evil foreboding. And it basically is talking about where you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I remember doing that with our kids when we first started having kids. This beautiful gift that God had given me, I was unable to fully enjoy it. Just like with marriage, this beautiful gift God had given me, I was unable to fully enjoy it because I was always afraid something was going to happen. The other shoe was going to drop, this evil foreboding. So with my kids, I would go in at night, you know, are they still breathing? Are they still breathing? And something that was supposed to bring joy wasn't as joyful as it should have been. This marriage that is supposed to be joyful. And here I am wondering, is he going to do to me what every other person has done to me? Because think about every adult in my life. My mother had betrayed me. My grandfather had betrayed me. My father, my biological father, died an alcoholic. My stepfather, who was a very kind and gentle man, but he never stopped any of the stuff that he could have. My grandmother, when she found out about the sexual abuse from my grandfather, the first thing she did was blame me. And so every person that was supposed to look out for me or care for me or be there for me wasn't trustworthy. And so that was sown into my heart, and I had to pull that out by the roots.
What did that look like? For anybody who might be watching who's maybe relating to some level, they know they've got brokenness, whatever it looks like. What was the process of resetting it so it could heal properly for you? Counseling? Conversations, what it looked like?
So it's a myriad of things. I think the first and foremost for people watching today, I think the first thing was, you know, if you go to the mall and you walk in, you know, entrance C, and you want to get to, let's say you want to get to Nordstrom, right? I mean, who doesn't love Nordstrom?
As one would.
Right?
Yes.
The first thing you have to find out is you have to look for the you are here.
Yeah.
Mm. Where am I? Mm-hmm. Because I can't get to where I want to be unless I figure out where I am. Mm. And I think that's the first step, is figuring out, where am I?
Yeah.
What am I willing to sit down and acknowledge? And usually that'll come through relationship. Mm-hmm. My husband always says, you know, marriage isn't meant to make you happy. It's meant to grow you up.
Oh.
And so here I was growing up by the conversations and him putting his finger on things that they just weren't healthy in me. And I'm having to acknowledge that. And then I think another step is having a counselor. Now, for the men who are watching, I don't use the word counselor. I say coach.
Better. Way better. Smart woman.
Because men tend to go, you don't take away my man card. I don't need fixing. But if you use the word coach, which is what I had to do to get my husband to go, then it's like, oh, yeah, everybody needs a coach. Every great athlete, every great golfer, every great, gym member, a coach is great.
Sure.
Get a coach. Get somebody that can push you to do more reps than you'd want to do on your own, can get you to lift more weight than you'd do on your own, get you to show up when you don't want to show up. And then the step after that is, and in conjunction with the other two, is allowing the Holy Spirit's voice to get turned up.
Yeah.
The volume to go higher, because it's not like the Holy Spirit isn't talking all along. Yeah. It's we learn to tune him out.
Mm-hmm. So true. You know, you talk about the fact that everyone who you should have been able to trust, you were not able to trust. And I have to tell you, the one part of your book that I found myself racing through because I had to find the answer is Colby's accident.
Yes.
And the huge question that God asked you that night. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I'd gotten a call that my son had, and when he was 17, and he's 24 now, but he had been in a really bad car accident. And I didn't know just how bad it was. I get there and I see my son's car is flipped over. The windshield is broken everywhere. I see people getting taken away in an ambulance. And I'm just trying to find, locate, like, where is he amongst all of this? You know, is he okay? Is he in an ambulance? What's going on? And I look over on a hill, and there's my son, and he's standing there. And I went over to him, and the police officer said, ma'am, we don't have accidents here where we don't also have to call the coroner. He said, this is called Dead Man's Curve, and your son is very, very lucky today. Now, I knew he was blessed that God had had his hand on him, but I'm standing up on the hill while the officers are interviewing him, and he had airbag bruises, but that's all that was on his body, and his car was totaled, destroyed. And here I am standing up on this hill, and God says, do you trust me? And I'm like, well, duh. I mean, look what just happened. Of course I trust you. What kind of question is that? And he's like, no, 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 do you trust me? And I'm thinking, first of all, do we really need to have this conversation right now? Like, I'm still covered. There's glass everywhere. The lights are going. The traffic's... Could we talk about this later? This would be really great. And he's like, no, I need to know, do you trust me? Do you trust me even if your son wasn't coming home with you today?
Wow.
Do you trust me? In other words, he was saying, is your trust built on that the outcome was in your favor? Mm-hmm. Or do you trust me because I am God? Mm-hmm. And I sat there for a second and I'm like, really? Like, can you let me think through this? And he's like, no, you need to decide this right now, standing on this grassy knoll on this hill, because you're going to be faced with this every single day when your kids, because I'm looking at this mess and I've got 3 children. And he's like, I need to know right here and right now, do you trust me? And I said, yes, God, I trust you. Even if it wouldn't have turned out the way I wanted, God, I trust you, not because of your hand for what you can do, but because of your face, because of my relationship with you.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah, we're just about out of time, but I really, before I let you go, on the other side of the re-break, if you will, and the healing, what is it like for you?
Well, I think first and foremost, just being able to share my story. I think so many pastors or spiritual leaders don't really share their brokenness or the reality of how raw things have been. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a travesty because I think people need to know. So I think that's a big thing. I think the other thing is just being able to walk through life without fear. Mm-hmm. People would tell you that I'm bold, I'm courageous, mm-hmm. that I will look fear in the face, but it wasn't always that way. Mm. There was a little girl that was afraid of the other shoe dropping. Mm. And I think that for us to literally walk in the confidence that God is king, that God is our protector, that God is looking out for us, He's providing for us, then I think there's a safety that we can walk in that we're not ever going to know in human relationship.
Yeah. You know, you're going to want to read more of Penny's story for yourself, and we'd be happy to get that to you. But do you know that at this very moment, the same atrocity that was happening to Penny when she was just a little girl is happening to little girls across the world right now? Would you watch this?
These are the faces of those who once were happy, once were safe, loved, cared for. Now they're vanishing at the hands of predators, abducted, misled. To distant cities they're taken, in foreign lands they're held captive. Their childlike innocence is erased. Freedom forgotten. Their spirit and will broken under abuse, under torture. Not only do these girls vanish, all that they were disappears too. Nowhere is there a darker evil than that perpetrated so viciously on the victims of sex trafficking. It may be the greatest evidence of Satan at work on this earth. And it isn't going away without a fight. Our Rescue Life partners are in place and ready to reach those who are most vulnerable, rescue those who have already been taken, and restore the precious lives of those who have survived the wickedness of human trafficking.
It's one of the most appalling things that I've ever witnessed in my life, sitting with some of these young girls in Southeast Asia and hearing their story. So many of them have no one who looks out for them, no one who, no school, no church buses come in to pick them up. They are left in the darkest of darkness all the time. And some people, one or two of you have written to me and said, well, why don't they just leave? Why don't they just escape? And it's so complicated. These little girls are told, hey, we'll get you a job in the city and you can send money home to your families. And when they discover that's not the reality, they've been drugged and now they're trapped in this life. They're told, if you try to escape, we know where you live and we know you've got younger sisters. So it's your choice. You stay here or we go get them. It's an absolute nightmare. And I've sat with these girls with them, literally sobbing on my shoulder, talking about what it's like to have sex with these older men over and over. And some of these girls are 12, 13, 14 years old. And we've had the privilege of sitting there and praying with them as they give their lives to Christ, but they need another kind of rescuing. And Randy, we've been doing that for a long time, and the need is greater now than it's ever been.
It is, and you know, a lot of them don't have any place to go, but for 15 years now, we have been giving them a place to go. And that's what we do when we reach, rescue, and restore these young children, mostly girls, but some boys too. We this is something that's so big in our hearts, Sheila, that we know we can't stop. The need is great. Over the years, we have averaged out the cost of this outreach, and it boils down to about $128 to reach, rescue, and restore one child. Now, we have a great opportunity right now because some of our faithful friends have stepped up and said, we're going to match the gifts during this campaign. So your gift today is actually doubled in its effectiveness and its power. So for $64, it will effectively reach, rescue, and restore one child. What does that mean? Bottom line is it means whatever you can do today is going to make the difference in someone's life. You're going to give someone that place to go. You're going to give them a hope and a future, which we know is the heart of God. So whatever you can do today, if you can give a gift of $1,280, that will help reach 20 children. A gift of $128 will reach 2, rescue, restore. It will turn things around. It will give them an out, because that's what they need, is an out. And we always do this in the name of Jesus Christ. So we give them the ultimate hope. So I am hoping now that you will take action. Go online, go to the phones, give the best gift you can, and join Sheila and I and all of those here at Life Outreach as we rescue these lives. Do it now.
Innocent children and young people longing to be loved and cared for are being abducted and sold at the hands of violent predators, forced into the evil industry of human trafficking. Through Mission Rescue Life, you can reach out to warn children who are at risk for sex trafficking, rescue those already enslaved, and restore young lives and give them a future. With a generous $320,000 matching gift, now your gift of $128 to help reach, rescue, or restore one child can be doubled to help 2 children. Your $64 gift will be matched to help save one child from the horrors of human trafficking, and a $32 mission rescue gift will be doubled to $64. With your gift today, we'll send you the Prayers for Life Journal, the perfect book to write down your prayers as you reflect on your relationship with Christ. With your gift of $128 or more, you'll also receive the NIV Thin Line Bible, along with 365 Days of Prayer for Life, a beautiful devotional filled with scriptures and key thoughts for each day of the year. Keep all 3 resources close by for your daily prayer time as you meditate on God's Word. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,280, which will now help save 20 children, and you may request our inspiring bronze sculpture, Let the Children Come. Please call, write, or make your gift online.
I pray you will give the best gift you can and know that we will rescue these children with your help. And today, Sheila, we'd like to offer them this.
Yeah, we will, for any gift at all, we'll be happy to send you Setting Broken Bones, Let God Heal What Hurt You by Penny. Penny, thank you so much for allowing God to use your pain to bring freedom to so many other people.
Thank you for the honor to be here.
It's awesome.
And we appreciate you guys watching. We'll see you again next time here on Life Today.
Bye.
If we can save one, and it's already saving and touching lives, but to me, this is just that beacon of hope that can shut down the lies of the enemy.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.